This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
14-year-old girl gave a forensic interview. The father made a call, and then Joseph Duggar allegedly admitted to everything. To the victim's father, and then again to detectives. And now he's sitting in an Arkansas county jail, about 7 miles that way from me, waiting to be extradited to Florida on felony child S abuse charges. And his wife is facing her own counts in a separate but connected investigation. In Arkansas, two states, two cases, a recorded confession in a family with a documented pattern of handling exactly this kind of thing internally, because that's what you do. The legal picture here is as complicated as it is damning. And if anyone can break down what Joseph Duggar's defense actually looks like from the inside out, it's a criminal defense attorney who's seen cases like this from every angle. Bob Mata, defense attorney, joining myself and Robin Drake today as we discuss a lot. And we will start with the Duggar situation, and we invite your thoughts, your comments in the comments section, wherever you are watching us right now. Let's start here. Bob, Joseph Duggar allegedly admitted to the abuse to the victim's father and then to Taneytown detectives who were on the line, reportedly confirmed during a recorded phone call. Walk us through, what a defense attorney is actually working with when a client has already made statements like that before an attorney is anywhere near the picture of what's going on here. I mean, what kind of situation are we looking at for the defense of Joseph Duggar?
A bad one for Joseph Duggar.
Like, all jokes aside, it's the first thing I ask a client when they walk in, or a prospective client. Did you talk?
Yeah.
Did you make a statement to law enforcement? And that's typically where I'm at with respect to whether or not it's going to be suppressible. You know, there's going to be a lot of things you're going to have to look at it, because that's where you're at. If there's a statement out there and it's incredibly damning, the best that you can hope to do is defense attorneys look at it and say, all right, well, was it a tap? Was it an over here? Did they go and get a warrant in terms of, you know, the over here that they definitely have, but the statements with respect to the initial statement was that, and you've got two states involved, right? You've got Arkansas and Florida. Yeah. I think Florida is, they're wide open down there. The sunshine state.
Yeah.
You can just do anything you want down there. They want everything out in the sunshine. I think that like Arkansas and you might know Tone, is a one person consent state. So, you know, I mean, you're going to have to try to attack it, because once you see that it exists in the world, it becomes probably the worst evidence that they have against you, because it's a confession. You know, there's no other way to slice it.
I mean, how do you go about going into a case? I mean, is this a case that is likely to even go to a trial? I mean, once you have a confession like that, or is it some sort of a deal that is made, or is it, let's take this to trial and I'm likely to be found guilty, but I'm going to negotiate this. I'm going to plead this to be less than what they're saying it is that I did. I don't know. I mean, where does something like this go when this is our dropping start off point?
Yeah, this is what I'm always talking about. And I'm always trying to remind people that a vast majority of cases do not go to trial. They get pled out. When I have evidence like this, it's typically, and I know about it on the front end. Like, so if I ask that question, did you make a statement? And he's sitting in front of me, or, you know, if I've gone to do a jail visit and he's like, yeah, you know, I made a statement. And then I'm saying, okay, well, what'd you say? And then he says, this is what I said. I'll say, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. I have to wait until we get the police reports. I have to see how they say that this went down. I need to see if there were warrants involved. And at that point, if there is a way that I can bring a viable motion to suppress, then we can try it. After that, if that fails, then we're dealing with a piece of evidence that's going to be impossible to get over. And what I'm recommending to you is that I start having a conversation about a plea. And we, you know, but ultimately at the end of the day, the sticking point is always whether or not somebody wants to go to trial is not the, the lawyer's choice. Okay? Sure. All we can do is advise them. We think it's a bad idea. It could be a trial tax. You know, if you plead this thing out, maybe we shave a couple of years off of it, whatever the case may be. But I mean, the reality is this thing quickly shifts into the latter of what you were talking about, where you're trying to work out a plea deal and you're trying to see if you can help them in any way in terms of shaving a bit of time off, you know. But reality is when the state has that kind of evidence, and it's your own words. And
yeah.
These aren't Richard Allen confessions.
Like, right. No torture involved here.
I guess I did it. You know, apparently I did. This is the guy talking about it at length, things that only he would know. So it's a death knell to any kind of potential trial. So I'd be stunned if it didn't get pled out, but I've been stunned before, you know.
Sure. And Bob, I'm curious, how does, if it does at all, you know, this family's got now a track record of some really abhorrent behavior with Josh beforehand. How is that going to enter into this at any point, you know, and whether it goes to trial or it's going to be mitigated out beforehand through a plea deal? Is that looked at by anyone?
I think it's looked at probably by the state, you know, but in terms of relevance, if it were to go to trial, I don't know that it would be relevant in terms of, because look, it's relevant to us in the real world.
Right. Sure.
But when you're talking about a trial, it's got to be relevant to the case that's before either the judge or the jury. And bad behavior of other family members, while it may show a pattern and that there were issues with this family, clearly, you know, is relevant again in the real world. But in terms of this particular case, unless you're going with some kind of mental defect type of defense.
So actually, to follow on with that, I've been, as you'll know, I've been binge watching the Duggars. I've been reading Jill's book. And what's been really, really striking is the trauma that the other siblings were exposed to by Josh and now another.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, as a defense attorney, how challenging is it to work with potential people, both prosecution and defense, that a lot of times the siblings are excusing the behavior, which it breaks your heart even more. They're downplaying, that they're just, I mean, they are really not wanting to hurt their brothers in earlier statements. So I'm curious how hard and challenging that is to work with as an attorney trying to show the true criminality here, when a lot of times the people involved are trying to say, yeah, he did it, but it's not criminal. I don't care. I want, you know, they just want it to go away.
Yeah. And that's that thing that we talk about, it seems like weekly, where, you know, I'm kind of discussing the fact of the matter is that we're dealing with the defendant. So we're in a unique position that the state does not have any kind of access to the defendant. So like we're dealing with it on a more human level, whereas prosecutors are typically looking at it as a piece of paper, a name on a piece of paper and facts. And we're just plowing through. Like, that's something that we always have to deal with. Like when I was representing Anthony Garcia, who, you know, his family came up with the money to hire us, and they're sitting there stunned that their son has been accused of murdering four people over 5 years, like stunned.
Right.
Like they had no inkling of knowing that he was capable of this. They had no, they couldn't wrap their mind around it, you know? So, I mean, every situation obviously is different, but in terms of like trying to get the family over the hump is also made more difficult depending on whether or not you've got a client who's made admissions to you as the attorney, or if you believe that your client is coming in and they're saying that they didn't do this. You get the discovery and you're tending to agree with them based on the lack of evidence. How do you handle that with the family other than preparing them for kind of the inevitable thing, which is he's going to be sitting at that defendant's table. The likelihood is that he's going to get convicted because juries want to hold somebody accountable for heinous acts. So it's a challenging aspect of it. And Robin, like you had kind of aptly brought up, like, I don't know if it was the last time we were on or the time before, you know, we have to wear a lot of different hats. I mean, there is that psychology hat that we have to put on in terms of how to deal with the family that you know is going to be resistant to wanting to assign blame or resistant to accepting the fact that they've done this thing. And, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, the bottom line is whatever's going on with the family doesn't affect in any way, shape, or form our representation of our client. I mean, our duty is to that person and that person alone. But the reality, again, the reality of the situation is you're trying to juggle all these different things when you're handling a case like that. And it's hard. And it's a difficult thing to tangle with, because you've got families that are devastated or in denial, and you're sitting there and you're like, man, you know, and frankly, I can't relay what my client is saying to me. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I've got attorney client privilege, and I explain that to them on the front end. They're not able to sit in with us when I'm having an interview with my client because it breaks privilege, you know? So it's like, you kind of have to keep them in the dark to a certain extent, but you're trying to prepare them for the worst if they're, depending on where they're at with it. You know what I mean? If they're in denial, if they're just like refusing to be helpful in any way because they just don't want to hurt that person because mm-hmm. they love them and it's their sibling. And, you know, you can't detach yourself from somebody you've unconditionally loved your entire life, and all of a sudden they've done something horrible, or they're accused of to have done something horrible. It doesn't make you not love that person anymore. You know, I mean, it may make you think about them differently, but still, you know, and it's hard to quantify what love is in words. It's mm-hmm. more feeling. You know, we've been trying to do it since we could put paper to pen to describe what love is. But I mean, all of it's challenging. And, you know, this family, man, the psychopathy of it in terms of it, it's a lot.
Here's where it gets me, because if somebody's not aware, they're part of this IBLP structure, which is a religion, and I put it in air quotes. They basically have a structure where you don't necessarily report wrongdoing to authorities on everything. There we go. There's, if you're watching us on YouTube, that is their little chart. Their umbrellas, there's Christ, which is the church, and, you know, Christ and Bill Gothard, you know, they hang out, they go to Denny's on the breakfast buffet, and they get the Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity, and then everything's great. And then there's the husband that's underneath God and Bill Gothard. You know, he's probably going to the IHOP. He doesn't quite get the Denny's Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity. But you got the husband, and then everybody from below the husband, which is the wife, the children, the victims, everyone. They all have to go to the husband and then report. And then the husband decides if this is something that is, you know, appropriate to report to the authorities. And we all know in the first round of this horror story that Jim Bob allegedly decided, you know what, we're going to kind of hold this one in. We're going to call this one close to the vest when the allegations came in from his own daughters of their son doing things to them, until finally a family friend said, you know what, Jim Bob, this whole campaign thing that you got going on, your whole political platform that you're running on, these things, these virtues that you claim you hold dear to your heart that come from God himself, you're kind of going against all that shit by not turning your son in for doing what he did to your daughters. And then it was, okay, maybe we should do something about that. You kind of got, it's a different aspect over here, because Jim Bob's, as far as we know, is not involved in this conversation, although who knows, the day is young. But what we understand is that Joseph here, this is 5 years ago that he did this, when the girl was nine. He was like 25, 26. He's sitting on a couch with a nine-year-old several times with a blanket over them, and then he's doing things with his hands. And that's all we need to say. This is what's going on 5 years ago. And then the girl finally comes out, says this, admits it, tells it to her father. The father calls Joseph and says, hey, I hear something happened on the couch with my daughter. Joseph comes clean And then he gets the officer on the line from Arkansas, and then he comes clean again. And it's not clear if Joseph was aware the officer was on the line. I'm going to take a wild guess that the answer is no.
Right.
But he did. He did then again say, yes, I did this.
See, that's that over here thing that I'm talking about.
So, yeah.
Like, if you're going to get an over here, I mean, we've handled cases right, where,
yeah,
it does. But like, typically, if it's a law enforcement over here and they're using a CI, and typically, yeah, it's but somebody that's involved, yeah, with that person and or a relative of the victim. You know, most of the times it's a baby mama or,
yeah,
you know, a parent of the child that was abused, that was in a relationship with that person. Because you see it all the time. You see it with, like, in, you know, boyfriend,
yeah,
step-parent relationships where you see abuse happening, and then there's an outcry. Sometimes after, many times after the relationship has been terminated for whatever reasons. And then at that point, they go, they make the outcry, the kid does, and then the parent goes to law enforcement. They're like, all right, this is what we need to do.
Yeah,
we're going to go in. We're going to get a you know, a tap warrant, an over here warrant, and we're going to be listening. So you're, sure, not necessarily, it's kind of like when they'd wire somebody up, except, mm-hmm, it's via phone, you know, phone calls.
Yeah. So,
you know, but it's like, you got to go in. Obviously they're going to have the probable cause to get it. And many times, and the cops are literally sitting there, like, mm-hmm, listening, just like,
sure, movie. I mean, so, how much does this complicate it when you have a family that doesn't believe in going to police when this sort of stuff happens? I mean, they're treating it like, oh, shucks, you caught me. It makes me curious. Like, I wonder how honest he's going to be with his own defense attorney. You know, when they hold all these things in close until they're called out on, which seems to be the track record, that's got to make things a little bit more complicated and illegal. But they hold religion as the reasoning for their thought process or their lack of accountability under the law. How does that play in at all under the law? Their religion and their belief system of, well, we handle these things internally and we don't go to the law, even though, you know, under the law we have to, but we don't because our religion supersedes it.
Yeah, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah.
Well, and you saw the guardrails. You know, we talk about guardrails on these things, and when Tony had the graphic up of the umbrella, you know, Christ, Father, whatever, mm, those are the guardrails. Nowhere in those guardrails did you see legality, state law, federal law. There was no guardrails.
No, they invent their own.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let me ask you this. How did it work for Lori Vallow?
Well, true, you know, they, yeah, were all just vessels. They were demons. They weren't even humans anymore. And it's like, in that case in particular, I'm like, this woman's batshit crazy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, the challenge for the defense in that case is that they don't have the insanity defense available to defendants in that state. You can only go in and attack the mens rea portion of a statute by saying, this person could not form the requisite intent because of a mental defect. So they have like a semblance of it, but you know, like you're not going to be able to lean on a religion if it entails, you know, being a pedophile or murdering people. You can't say, mm-hmm, well, you know, that's what our religion calls for. We keep it all in house. We deal with it. We deal with it on our own. That's,
you know, it's also interesting too. You know, just the difference between Vallow's, you know, small, you know, crazy cult mentality, and I mean that she had roughly their followers, you know, of people of their mindset. They had roughly 5 to 10, maybe 15-20 at their height until the real crazy came out.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, but with the IBLP, this is a massive group that has tons of social proof that's reinforcing itself about how to handle all these situations. And so, you know, you're right. It does not fit within the legal guidelines of anything of what is right or not right. But I wonder how much they might try to fall back on, hey, this is the way we handle things. This is how we, you know, because I mean, their reform project for Josh was to send him away to one of the free labor camps that's run by IBLP. Seriously, it is labor. They got labor, yeah, camps for kids.
Scientology in a way. It's like Sea Org to a certain. They're kind of like Scientology light in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But way out there where it's exposed to everyone. It's like, you can sign up, go to the website. You can literally sign up right now if you want to go to one of their clinics and camps. I was looking at it right before we came on air.
Oh, I saw it. There's a workshop coming up in April that maybe we should take a field trip to.
Yes. Their videos on authority are really interesting.
Yeah. It's the whole thing is it's a non-starter in terms of the – I mean, there's a – you know, the separation of church and state exists for a reason.
Sure.
Not in this case.
Right. I mean – well, maybe not to them, but to the eyes of the law, it does. So, and that's what matters. It's a really bizarre case. And it's just, you know, I mean, how did it work out for the Catholic Church? When all that started coming down the pipe with, you know, the priests and the real issues that they were having with molesting young boys, you know, and the same with the Boy Scouts, you know, I mean, like all these kind of, you know, institutions that have existed that really put predators in a prime position to be able to do what it is that they most desire doing. You know, eventually you hope that the kids are going to finally start out crying and it's going to be made public, because it's like that dominion and power that's held over these kids in terms of, and then when you add the family dynamic in, it just makes it all that much more difficult.
It's bred into. This kind of control is bred into them. I mean, that's 100%. Why it's so different from these other cults that start later in life, as Tony and I were talking about yesterday.
Right.
This is from birth. It is so, you don't get over indoctrination that is part of who you are it's all the memories they have. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, you could make the argument that they don't know any better because that's all they've ever known.
You could. I mean, you might be able to actually, but they did get out there. I mean, that actually is an interesting argument.
Still not a defense, though.
Right.
The problem is, it's not.
Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Right. No.
Yeah.
The other thought to this, and this is just pure conjecture, he hasn't been charged with anything else. This sort of shit never happens in a vacuum. Does anyone for one second believe that it just was he got a wild hair one day?
It was a one-off.
It's a one-off. I'm just going to get this blanket and go sit with this 9-year-old over here. And I got some questions. I want to experiment. I mean, I don't think that's how this went.
No.
I'm thinking there might be a trend and a track record, and there might be other victims. Again, hasn't been charged with anything, but I'm going to take a wild guess if we're just going to base it on reality and how we know these fuckers work. There's probably more people.
And they don't even know their victims. So that's what's
And that's the thing.
They don't know their victims because it's the only life they know. Mm-hmm. This is the way it is.
It's the
anybody who had interactions with these pieces of shit with their children needs to be having some very serious conversations. The problem with that statement is most of the time they travel only within their own sect, within their own cult, within other cult members. So all the cult members, all the fathers who are right below Goddard and Jesus at Denny's, they're all ready to be like, the buck stops here. We'll handle this internally. But I would hope to God, literally, it's time to come forward. And if they do, and if there's a litany of more people that come out and have a horror story against Joseph Duggar, again, not saying there are, I have no idea, but if there are and they start coming forward, this is going to be the worst PR nightmare the Duggars have ever seen. They thought Josh was bad. Wait till this one continues to come forward.
It goes to what Robin was saying. Like the people that you think most about in those situations are the kids, because they're indoctrinated from birth and they know no different. And if you're not educated that something is wrong, because that's the thing that you deal with and we dealt with in this country forever until they started educating kids in school about abuse, and you are not the problem here. It's the predator that's the problem. It's not your fault. That person is doing something that they shouldn't be doing to you. And unless the kids are taught that, they don't know.
You know,
they don't know.
The most striking word that watching the saddest, you know, TV specials I've been watching on this, and then reading on Jill's book, is the most powerful tool they use nonstop is shame.
Yeah,
they shame these kids into behaviors,
100%, man.
And the most striking thing about that is what are the kind of horrendous human beings use that same power of shame? People that victimize children,
100%.
And so it's exactly the same
thing. Where they live,
same behavior.
Yes,
these idiots better think long and hard before they get on the bandwagon of, we love all of our children and we hope everything, and get on the band like they did behind Joshy, where they were just like, we love him, and they and then they just kind of go silent. They better think long and hard about it with this one, especially if there ends up being a lot of allegations that start coming up against him, because that's going to, I mean, they're already on the wrong side of history. But if they want to get even further deep, I mean, yeah, go ahead, dig in. Dig on in. Behind Joseph. That'll work out well for you.
This is also why, this is why it's so challenging, because these cultures inoculate themselves from the outside scrutiny by marrying internally. You know, exactly. That's why the father has to approve the courtship. He can only court someone that the father approves, who's going to be someone who's already indoctrinated into the system. You know, and so when you have that insular, you know, self-perpetuating cycle of crazy, then it's never nothing ever comes to light. Because I was looking at the stats on this. You know, we talked about yesterday, Tony. It's like the Amish have a lot of similar problems, but they actually are so cloistered that they don't interact with English all that often, and so it doesn't really come to light. But when you're looking at the raw numbers for legal cases for these types of cases, they're on par exactly with each other. Mm-hmm. But this group actually interacts more with the outside world than the Amish do. And it's not disparaging any of these things. We're just talking raw numbers.
Yeah, and I mean, to kind of go back to it, it's not just that shame aspect, but you know, they're taught there's a normalcy thing that they're indoctrinated into as well, that this is normal. This is how it's supposed to be. And again, if you're a child and you don't know any better, how are you supposed to know to outlie if you're being taught?
Did you see?
That's brainwashing. I mean, it's totally.
And just talk about the normalcy of things. You know, part of the most horrendous thing, I called my wife in there. She leaves the room when I start watching these things on TV, right? And I'm watching one of the videos of them giving instruction. One of the church leader up there giving instruction on how to properly spank a child on stage. He bends the boy over his knee on stage, shows him how to spank him, that he's going to love him more for him. And then he didn't give him a big enough hug. He spanked him some more and said, now give me a bigger hug.
Yeah. I don't know how people like...
That's exactly what trauma bonding is called.
I don't know how people watched... It's not like the Duggar show was ancient history. You know, this was just a few years ago. This was like 10 years ago on TLC.
And it's all in your town, Tony. It's always in your town. That's what I'm curious about.
So many people. Yeah, come. You'll find. Wait till July. You'll come join the cult.
It really is always in your town, man.
There's so many here. I know. But the thing is, the so many people watch this damn show and it's got their warm and fuzzies out of it. How does anybody look back at the clips of this show and not be completely creeped out?
Same like Ruby Frankie.
I mean, it's
exactly like Ruby Frankie.
I was creeped out back then watching it. I don't respect all religions. I think some need to be called the fuck out, and this is one of them. We need to stop respecting everybody that claims what they're doing is a religion when it's really just coercive control.
I mean, 100%, but you're never going to be able to stop it because of the amendment, you know.
But we need to, as a society, not respect it socially. We need to call this shit out and not be like, oh, isn't that cute? You all like to wear skirts and repress your women. Oh, you have the right to do that. That's super. And you do have the right to do it. I have the right to say you're batshit fucking crazy. And these women, I hope to God, get away from you and disown you and never speak to you for the rest of your life. And you die in a flaming pit.
Yeah.
But, that's my right to say that, too. But we need to do more of this rather than look at it as, oh, it's cutesy. Don't they make nice omelets when you stop at the Amish restaurant or whatever? Insert religion that represses human beings here. You know, it's sickening. And I'm so sick of pretending that there's something moral or godly or wonderful going on behind the closed doors that none of us see until they're fucking kids.
But T, it's like for every person like that thinks that it's just adorable and look at how cute we all are, there's people like us. You know what I mean?
But there's not enough.
I'm like, this is the weirdest shit I've ever seen.
I know.
People are freaks. You know, but to each his own.
Yeah.
Therein lies the rub. But like ultimately, the accountability aspect of it, and it's that thing where you're really from the law enforcement side of it. You know, when they're trying to infiltrate, it's so damn hard.
It is.
Because of that protective bubble in terms of who they allow in. It's like I've done, like, you know, Mike King with his, you know, who's got his channel Profiling Evil. But like when he went in and was able to infiltrate that particular cult down there, where they had done essentially the same thing. And yeah. they had essentially bought like an entire neighborhood.
Yeah.
So they were insulated from the outside world. And it's those kids that are born into it.
Yeah.
That you're concerned with more than anything else, because consenting adults, you know, I always sit here and wonder, how do people get brainwashed like that? Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about like doctors and educated people, where I'm always like, nobody's ever brainwashed me into some crazy shit like that. But then you see people on an equal educational level that are brainwashed into it. And it's, you know, I mean, obviously you have to dive deep into what's going on with that person that puts them in a unique position to be so susceptible
validation.
But, yeah.
Acceptance and validation is a very, very powerful lever of influence over people.
100%.
And when you use that acceptance and validation and you throw some love bombing in there and you're valued and seen for who you are, and you have any inkling of not having that in one aspect of your life, I don't care how educated you are. I don't care how emotionally intelligent you are. You can be extremely susceptible to it. Yep. I do believe, though, that when you – as I was talking to Tony about this, you know, hard to imagine – us, like people that really dive deep and try to understand what's going on here, of not being inoculated against it. I do think we're inoculated against it just because we're fascinated by it.
Right.
But yeah, and that's what it comes down to. You know, when groups and organizations offer a path to calm the chaos in your brain, and they always start out with the high level love bombing or validation or seeking of acceptance, all the things that our brain, the big four, are firing when you're getting, and they're not getting it from any other aspect of their lives. That's when it starts getting rooted and starts getting some traction. And then it's the slow build. It's the grooming into it.
100%, man. 100%.
There's so much, and there's going to be a lot more to come on these. Sadly. These
and monsters. I hate that case.
I know.
I like the case we're going to be talking about later today. That's what I like seeing happen to pedophiles.
Yeah. I've been looking forward to that one, Bob.
Yeah.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.